Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Pay as you earn, then pay more years after you've earned it. We have the latest on the tax bill debacle. The party's over for corporate bonds. We explain why some analysts are calling time on them. And why it pays to get a move on in retirement. We name the best places to draw your pension. All of this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Steve Lodge.
Hello.
And Ellen Kelleher.
Hello.
And our special studio guest, Justin Urquhart-Stewart, Director of Seven Investment Management.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, more figures have been bandied about for the number of additional tax bills or tax rebates we can expect to receive in the post as a result of errors in the pay-as-you-earn tax system. At first, reports suggested that 15,000 people faced extra tax bills. Then the number who had underpaid tax rose to 1.4 million. And some other newspapers have suggested that the number of cases of incorrect tax being deducted could be as high as 10 or... I read this morning, 23 million. So what exactly are these errors? Who is affected? And more importantly, do they actually have to pay? Steve, I think you've been looking at this very closely. Anyone reading a range of newspapers could potentially be quite, you know, quite confused by this. What's the actual fact of the matter?
Well, it's a lot of people, have you looked at Matthew? And the 15,000 are the people who will have been sent letters this week who should have already received them to say that effectively they still owe an average of about 1,400 quid. So quite significant sums. However, double that number, 30,000 this week, have also been sent letters saying, hurrah, you've got a tax rebate average about 420 quid.
This is unusual.
It is. It's very nice, isn't it, for doing nothing. I wish I could get one every week. And the 5.7 million figure is the total number of people who are going to be getting these letters of either kind between now and Christmas.
And of the 5.7 million who will get one of these letters, how many are getting a bill and how many are getting a rebate?
Well, good news, 4.3 million are getting the rebate.
So the vast majority.
Yes, exactly. And... for cynics amongst, because there will be amongst listeners, cynics who think this might just be a sort of exercise in reducing the government's deficit, the net gain of this exercise is about 200 million quid, that's all. So they are looking to collect 2 billion people from one lot, but give out 1.8 from the other. So it's not a huge sum of net gain for the government and indeed for the rest of us, taxpayers.
So, yeah, so it's not really a revenue raising, no. as you say. It's going to be a lot of anxiety for some people. Who will be talking about in particular?
OK, well, PAYE is the system where tax is deducted at source, as we know. It's the one we know for employment, of course. But it also covers pensioners as well. Pension companies deduct tax at source. And it's based on a system that incomprehensible little slip of paper called the tax coding notice, which makes a stab at the tax you will be due to pay in the following year. You get that in the spring, and for the following year, it's deducted according to that slip of paper, or indeed should be deducted according to that slip of paper. However, but it's based on essentially based on the previous year. So in practice, of course, things can turn out to be different. You could, for example, change jobs. There could be mistakes in the system. There could be mistakes in talking to your employer and your employer talking to the revenue. And of course, as many people have assumed, the revenue just may be incredibly slow at keeping things up to date.
Now,
so the under and overpayments reflect... Yeah. Putting that right at the end of the year, if you like.
Certainly. Now, I, like many, go through the annual torture of having to fill in my self-assessment form. So this strikes me as pretty rich, given that I'm giving them all the figures. Or am I not affected?
No, you're not affected. So the key point is people who fill in self-assessment tax returns, and you're right, not many of us welcome that in a way. But in one sense, it's a way of putting the whole thing right. And some experts are saying that could be the kind of medium-term solution to this whole problem, that we will have a kind of automatically filled in form that pulls in all this information for us and puts it right at the end of the year. So really, this exercise, the problem's coming out of the revenue's own reconciliation, but it's a reconciliation that arguably some individuals are doing already, and more perhaps should be.
And this is going to be crucial because so often now we're all moving jobs. The average time in a job is about 5 years. So you've got your normal PAYE form you've got, and then you'll find it's changing again. You have to keep up to date with it. So even those passive taxpayers now are going to have to be actively checking what's going on a regular basis.
Absolutely, Justin, you're right. I mean, another classic one as well. We're all encouraged to take more responsibility for our own pension provision. Tax codes, to a degree, will take into account the tax relief you've got previous years, and they'll put that through to the next tax code. But of course, you may not make the same contributions each year. So by definition, they're a pretty rough and ready stab in the dark. The revenue, of course, talks about having improved its computer system and things will get better in the future. But of course, earlier this year, there were many reports out there talking about the number of incorrect tax codes that had been issued. So I think there's clearly some more short-term pain to come.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Just finally, what about people who want to say can't pay or won't pay?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, if you get offered money, well, I would sit back
take
and
it,
enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If instead you get sent a bill, there are essentially sort of three defences, if you like. I mean, the first one should be the basic one, which should be just check the bloody thing's accurate. Have they forgotten something? Why do you assume they're correct this time when they were arguably incorrect before? They may have forgotten something. So you may find ways of paring back your bill, or indeed increasing the amount you're owed if you start digging away in your records. Number two, there is something called an extra statutory provision, A19, which is a complicated thing, but essentially says if you've tried your best to give them all the information and you believe that your affairs were in order, then they should think about writing the whole money off. And the other one is that, of course, some of these problems arise because your employer or your pension provider has failed to provide the proper information to the revenue. So it should, you know, there should be an element here of saying, it's not my problem, Gov, go and talk to my employer or ex-employer, or go and talk to my pension provider for the unpaid tax.
So there are ways to challenge it. Thanks for that very much, Steve, and for Steve's definitive Q&A on what to do if you get a letter from HM Revenue and Customs, and indeed how to challenge an extra tax bill. Look out for that article in FT Money with this weekend's FT, and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, where's the best place to enjoy a comfortable retirement? Here's a clue, it's not here in the UK. First, though, corporate bonds. Investors who bought into corporate bond funds a year and a half ago have enjoyed some spectacular returns. With the credit crisis raising fears that companies would default on their bonds, prices collapsed at the end of 2008 and early 2009. Since then, however, yields have fallen and bond prices have rallied strongly. The Henderson Sterling Bond Fund, for example, is up 65% since March 2009. But with yields looking unlikely to fall further and heightened market uncertainty over economic growth and inflation, one analyst said this week, the party is definitely over. So, Ellen, is it time for us all to leave the party?
Yes, I think you should get out while the going's good, or at least that's what advisors are saying now. And you know, we definitely have this threat that yields will fall even further and will stay low for a considerable amount of time. And a lot of advisors are comparing the situation to what happened to Japanese bonds back during the crisis that in the 80s, and saying, well, couldn't this happen now? You know, obviously, we don't know. The economic uncertainty is such that there's very little visibility, according to bond fund managers. But Justin, I mean, what are your thoughts to what kind of arguments would you
It is fascinating. There is a general fear, certainly in the States, that we may all be turning Japanese. And in fact, they've even invented another horrible combined word again called deflation, which is a combination of deflation with something that feels like depression. That's to say, well, actually depression, but growing at a suboptimal level, maybe only 1% in America, and that would have an overall effect. And this is, really comes down to the basic issue of the next few years. Are we going to have inflation? Are we going to have deflation? And if you ask around the city at the moment, the camps are very, very firmly divided. If you think it's inflation, then index-linked is where you need to be, and then your corporate bond funds probably ain't going to be there. And so individual corporate bonds. But if you think there's actually going to be inflation, then actually it's probably then looking more towards gilt, and actually, sorry, in deflation rather, you're going to have your gilts and also corporate bonds as well. But the corporate bond funds themselves have gone so far that the very least you can say is the easy money's been made. There is now far greater risk there. What I would ask advisors and individuals to look at is maybe some of the individual corporate bonds, because remember, when you're buying a corporate bond or a gilt, if you hold it until redemption, you've got a nice view as to what you're going to get. The risk is your government going bust, which, of course, these days isn't unknown, and, of course, your company going bust. But you can sort of measure that one. So almost moving away from the funds themselves and looking at the individual entities might be a better value.
Justin, to what extent are government bond yields and corporate bond yields linked? I mean, obviously, you have this differential between the two, and corporate bond yields tend to be sort of more attractive on average. But isn't there some sort of domino effect that you see in the market?
Yes, I mean, certainly there's the overall domino effect you could see in fixed interest, because you would actually see if there's a fear in corporates, people then could move more to governments. But equally, if the pressure's on the governments, therefore you could see the fear going elsewhere, and that's when you see more return to gold and such like, and other sort of teddy bears that people like to hold on to in moments of stress.
Yeah.
We're in a world now where, 10 years ago, you'd have been talking about overall government fear of government debt wasn't really a problem, except in rather extraneous emerging markets. Now, of course, it's really come home to roost, and even down to the UK as well. Over the next few months, some of our friends in the Eurozone they probably won't call it default. They'll have a better way. They'll call it restructuring.
Yeah.
And that will put pressure on those government issues, and you'll see that reflected in corporates as well.
So are there any safe areas, or say safe, that's probably too strong a word, but...
Less risky.
Yes, less risky areas of the bond market. For example, like high yield bonds, are they looking more attractive
now? Well, you just have to look. In the high yield, people are desperate at the moment trying to get any form better levels of yield. And, of course, in this period of lower growth and lower return, it's difficult to find. If you're getting a higher yield, then look at the underlying asset that's actually giving you that higher yield. Is that corporate at some risk? And if it's too good to be true, then please be careful. So in terms of individual corporates, go for the quality ones. I would rather at the moment take a slightly lower yield and have a better quality corporate.
Well, that's great, Justin. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Justin and Ellen, and for an analysis of sterling corporate bond funds and those that may still offer some value. Look out for Ellen's article in the FT Money section this weekend and online at ft.com/money. And finally today, retirement planning. Where do you reckon is the best place to retire? Frinton-on-Sea? Eastbourne, Bognor Regis? Well, you might be unsurprised to hear that wealth managers think you'd be better off heading abroad, and not just for the weather. Tax rates, pension schemes, and reciprocal social security arrangements can make a number of overseas countries a good destination for UK savers with a pretty good pension. So, Ellen, you've obviously got decades to go before you have to think about any of this, but for those of the rest of us who are a little bit closer perhaps to retirement, where should we be heading?
Well, it's a difficult choice, and it comes down to sort of your own interests. If you sort of have a passion for golf, or you might want to, I don't know, head to sunny Spain, or, you know, there's so many options out there. And it seems as if the Department for Work and Pensions is actually pushing people and encouraging Brits to look abroad, because they have a whole section on their website on the best places to retire abroad, which seems a bit sort of unusual for a pensions department to be doing that. But yeah, there are a number of arguments that suggest that it's a good idea to look abroad. First point is that if you stay in the EU, it's quite attractive. You know, you don't really lose any of the benefits of living in Britain, and residency requirements are easy and buying property is relatively easy. And you can also put your money into a QROP, which has a number of attractive benefits.
The type of pension scheme.
Yes, exactly. You basically set up a QROP in, say, Guernsey, and then after 5 years, your pension falls out of the revenues net if you're abroad. So why stay in Bournemouth when you can live in Seville?
Indeed. And if I was looking further afield, beyond Europe, any particular countries that you've come across that you think are advantageous?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you have a number of these countries that have, you know, for example, Canada, New Zealand, where, you know, there are few people and huge land, sort of lots of land. So they're definitely interested in having more British pensioners come their way. And they're willing to set up these deals where you can effectively buy your way into the country if you invest with the government. In New Zealand, I think if you give them about 2 million New Zealand dollars, they'll let you become a citizen. You just have to lend it to them for 5 years.
So you have to have quite a bit of money there.
Yeah, you do.
I'm not sure what the exchange rate is for the New Zealand dollar, but that sounds like a lot of money to me.
Yeah, no, it is a lot of money. But, you know, it's attractive. I mean, if you just sort of just feel this sort of kind of desire to escape to the Antipodes, and by all means, you should investigate these schemes.
I think there are some other exciting places to go to with some maybe not quite so good tax breaks, but certainly I'll be off to Malaysia because it's a lovely country. The people are nice. They quite like the Brits still, which makes a change. Then, of course, next to that, you've got Singapore. And the great thing about Singapore is, A, the underground works, but more to the point, they've got some extremely good hospitals, which I'll need in my dotage, or in my case, probably quite soon. So that's got me marked. I'm down there.
Are you definitely leaving, Justin?
I may get thrown out first, but in time, I will, I suspect, be out there.
I'll have to get you to dial in to the podcast from your Singapore mansion. Ellen, thanks for that. And if you'd like to know more about the practicalities of retiring abroad and those QROP pension schemes that Ellen mentioned, as well as, I think, Ellen's choice of the top four destinations, you can look out for her feature, which will be in this Saturday's FT Money section. But that's all for this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you'll find weekday news updates and all of these stories on our website, ft.com/money. And if you have a question you'd like us to answer about any aspect of your finances, just email us. We will answer the questions or get financial experts to do so on the reader's questions page of FT Money. It's a free service and anonymous, so just send your questions to money@ft.com. Next week, we'll bring you another financial lowdown in downloadable form, but until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Ellen, Steve, and our special studio guest, Justin Urquhart-Stewart of Seven Investment Management.
Goodbye.
Bye.